Welcome to the home of Blood, Sweat, and Words, a podcast that empowers writers. My name is Joanne Carson. I'm a fiction and nonfiction author, blogger, and podcaster, and I'm trying to make sense of the writing world today. My weekly show is current, relevant, and above all, honest. Join me, and we'll talk it to the bone. That's what Blood, Sweat, and Words is all about. Today I'm talking with Anne Janzer about why brain science is important to authors. I'll also be talking to her a bit about marketing because she has some interesting ideas on that. But first, a personal update. My book, Murder for Christmas, is now available on Amazon for pre-order. Murder for Christmas. 12 strangers invited to a remote island lodge discover turkey is not the only thing on the menu, as one by one they meet their maker. Will Maddie Rathborn, with her superior mind, crack the mystery before the killer gets her? Or is there a supernatural force at work that cannot be conquered? Murder for Christmas. Think Agatha Christie meets the House of Usher. Welcome to episode 6 on Blood, Sweat, and Words. I'm your host, Joanne Carson, and today I'm talking with Anne Janzer, why brain science is important to writers. Before we start, let me tell you a bit about Anne. Successful nonfiction hybrid author Anne Janzer calls herself an armchair cognitive science geek. What does that mean? Anne loves reading and learning about the way our minds work. Another interesting thing to note is that her background in technology marketing helps her with book marketing. Seth Godin is one of my thought gurus, said this about her books, and I quote, "Research-based, hands-on, step-by-step wisdom that can help you wrestle with your lizard brain. Certain to help thousands of would-be writers write." Now that's quite the accolade. So welcome, Anne.
Hi, thanks for having me, Joanne. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, thank you. My first question is, I notice you've been a ghostwriter. What is that like?
So I kind of sidestepped into that. I was doing a lot of freelance writing for different companies, and occasionally they would ask me to write something for a specific executive. And instead of just writing something in the bland brand voice for the executive, which is, I suspect, maybe what they even expected, I took it as a personal challenge to write something that kind of sounded like it would have come from that executive if you'd known them. So that if they read it, they're like, yeah, totally, that's what I would have written. You know, so I would try to put in some of their vocal mannerisms or some of the words or something about that. But obviously, you know, a very polished, well-written version of that person. So that was my ghostwriting experience. And I actually found it to be, you know, a lot of fun. So, I mean, if you've got fiction writer listeners, I guess you get to do this fun in dialogue. For those of us who are nonfiction, we have to find other ways.
That's quite the challenge. What made you break out and start your own writing?
So I kind of sidled into that as well. I was a freelance writer for lots of different companies, and then at some point realized I needed to have a blog and an online presence for my own business. So I started blogging in my own voice. But and here's the counterpart of being a good ghostwriter, which is that you get so adept at sliding into the voice of the brand or an individual person that then you can kind of lose who your own voice is, right?
Oh, no.
Right? You can sort of find, wait, what am I? So my blog posts were just kind of, you know, short and corporate-y. But when I started writing my first book, I would start writing and I go, oh no, this just sounds like bland corporate speak. You know, I had to keep discarding what I was writing because it wasn't coming out really what I felt my voice was. It was coming out what I was just so accustomed to doing. I don't want to say I was accustomed to bland corporate speak, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Someone else's voice.
Well, someone else.
It works because your books, you can hear your authentic voice in there.
Thank you. But, you know, that took a lot of discarding and rewriting to just like, whoa, that's not going to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, though. That's good to hear.
So one of your top main topics is brain science. Why do you think it's important to writers to know about brain science?
Yeah, so it's, writing ultimately, there's two reasons actually. One is this, is that writing is ultimately just another form of human communication. From my head, ideas, they take a form and they travel to your head. And so those are at least two human brains involved in any piece of writing, right? It's mine and the unique way that I think about things and yours, and am I reaching you? Because, a written work, whether it's a fiction or a nonfiction, it's not complete until someone has read it and understood it. That's what completes it. Otherwise, it's not really a communication. It's right.
Oh, absolutely.
So I think it's important to understand, first of all, what's going on in our own heads, because writing is the act of taking all this these thoughts and ideas and somehow externalizing them into written form. And then it's also equally just as important to have some insight into what's happening in your reader's head when they're encountering it. I think that a little bit of understanding about or curiosity about cognitive science can make you a more effective writer, both more effective within your own self and more effective at reaching other people with the things that you write.
So I was fascinated with your concept of being two writer, of there being two writers within us. Can you explain that?
Yes, so first of all, let me just quick say I don't think we're all schizophrenic or anything like that.
Oh,
Some
we
of us may be. You
don't
don't know, yeah.
know.
So this is sort of a useful fiction, but it comes out of real life. Now, I mean, have you ever had this experience, Joanne, where you feel sometimes that ideas just come to you from a place that's not,
Oh,
right?
definitely. Yeah, they're there. They're just
They're
right
there.
there. Yeah.
They appear, and you're like, "Well, where did this come from?" The Greeks probably, said it was the muses or the gods, and maybe that's so. But I suspect it's different mental processes we have firing in our brains. So when you think about that, we're all actually pretty complicated mental thought and feeling and emotions. This is a fairly complicated subject, but it's useful to think about, how to corral these different parts of your self in the writing. So I tried to divide up when I wrote the book, The Writer's Process. I have found this useful fiction to think about the two selves of my writing self. One is the productive, the disciplined, the one that I have control over through focus. I'm going to sit down and write for 40 minutes, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to plan, and I'm going to, that's my productive, disciplined self. And at the same time, I know that I need to get in touch with that other part that just contributes ideas seemingly out of the blue, the creative and associative thoughts. And if you think about it, in your writing, you need both. You need to be both creative and productive. If you're entirely grinding through productive and never, think creatively, then you probably write a lot of really dull stuff,
Yeah,
right?
absolutely.
Yeah. And if you're entirely creative, and I talk to other people who have this problem, they say, "I have, 20 novels I've started and nothing is ever finished." So they have a lot of creativity, but you and I know, let's not even get to publishing and marketing. Even getting the thing written, it's not enough to simply be creative. You have to bring discipline, you have to bring structure, you have to bring planning, to get especially something like a book done,
And that is
right?
such a common story. People have so many ideas, and they're great ideas, and they just can't bring it together.
Yeah, it's really common. I mean, so it's to have this sort of sense of these two parts of you helps you understand which one you need to be working on. And it takes both. It takes both. Yeah.
It's so complicated.
Yeah. It's fun though. It's
Yeah,
fun.
well, it's interesting thinking about it in terms of brain science. I've always heard it in terms of muses and the daemon and things like that. But of course, our brain works differently.
And it's, the nice thing is that when you think of it as part of these mental processes that you have, it gives you a little bit of a sense of not control, but a little bit more control over. If it's just the muses descending on you, you get to say, "Oh, well, my muse just isn't here today,"
Yep.
But it's something that's, it's that associative thinking part of yourself, and then you think, "Well, I just have to figure out how to get in touch and how to access that part of myself." It keeps you a little bit more responsible for the whole thing.
Yeah, it makes it much more approachable.
Yeah,
Yeah,
right.
absolutely. Well, I heard you on another podcast. That's where I first met you, was on, listening to your podcast on Smarty Pants about marketing in a way that suits you. It was an amazing podcast. Can you
Thank
tell us a
you.
little bit about that?
Yeah, so this is something I'm really ideas I'm really passionate about here, because here's the thing, is that we all look around as indie authors at all this advice on how to market our books, and the universe of advice seems endless and varied and conflicting
And
and
expensive.
expensive and time consuming. It's like, oh my God, when am I going to write?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah.
It's overwhelming. It's overwhelming. And the thing is that a lot of the advice that you hear may not, it may not make that much sense for you, or it may be okay for you, but it might be the not be the most high priority thing that you should do. Or it may be, if someone's telling you to go out, I heard this gentleman talk, and he was a wonderful guy. And he could sell what's the iced Eskimos or something, right? And right? So he's like, no, what you got to do is you got to fill the trunk of your car with your books, and then you got to drive around to every gift shop, and you got to, every time you meet someone, you open up your trunk and you sell. And the guy gave a talk, and afterwards, I swear to you, this line full of people, full of authors, this room of authors, all lined up to buy his children's book because he was just so charming and wonderful, right? Clearly, that strategy works for him, and clearly, it's not going to work for me. I'd rather die. So, when someone gives you book marketing advice, myself included, right, recognize that, and generally, they're doing it out of the best intention. Right, they want to share with you something that has worked, and that's wonderful. So it's you have to take that, but then you have to say, and yet, this may not fit me. I don't believe there is one right answer,
Oh, I think that's so important.
and we have to give ourselves permission to believe that, and to know too that what's, anyone who says there is one right answer, not only is ignoring the wide complexity of authors and books and audiences, but also the fact that this book marketing landscape that we're inhabiting is changing week by week and month by month. So what works today may not work tomorrow if you're talking tactics. So what can we do instead of just trying to absorb everything that we read or listen to? We have to think about what are our objectives for our book. What does our audience expect and need? And that has to do a lot with the genre that we're writing in, of course. And what are we personally strong at and enjoy doing, right? I mean, this is where, like, I'm not going to go.
With the car.
That is not my strength. That would be lousy use of my time. So you need to ask yourself as an author, well, okay, I really love writing. Maybe I can write guest blog posts, or I really love, like what we're doing right here, I really love talking with other authors about books or writing or marketing or your subject area. So maybe I'll do podcast interviews, because that gives me energy, that fulfills me, that makes me happy. And you need to give yourself permission to continue learning, but to prioritize and not try to do everything, but just try to keep building for the long term on your book. Do something that is sustainable to you personally and financially sustainable, but also sustainable with your energy, with your time, with your writing. And you are the only one who can figure that out. So.
Well, that's brilliant. I mean, it really is brilliant because a lot of the marketing gurus are selling their product, and you get this hard pitch that, unless you're doing this, whatever, your book won't sell. And for writers with their little baby books, they jump on the line, and it's heartbreaking as well as expensive.
It is. And, it's just all you have to have faith in yourself that you understand your books, your audience, your needs, and that you can make good decisions. A lot of these, you can learn from a lot of these people, but you don't have to buy into there's one system to march through. You get to say, that's not for me,
Absolutely.
without guilt, without guilt.
Without guilt, that's right. Like you have to trust because no one really knows. The world is publishing right now is insane. It's crazy. It's changing all the time. No one really knows. So trusting yourself, I love that advice.
Good. That's a message I'm really trying to get out there, because I do see so many authors, stressed about it, about book marketing, and thinking they have to do one thing. And maybe for you, buying a box of 20 author copies and sending them with personal notes to 20 people who are influencers, maybe that's your marketing campaign. I mean, it could be something very simple. You don't have to do traditional book marketing, go on a publicity tour. I mean, you don't have to do the things that best-selling authors did 10 years ago. You can do what works for you and your book and your time and your budget.
Yeah, and be flexible and change as time and
Absolutely.
circumstances change.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I have to know, how did you get an endorsement from Seth Godin?
Yeah, that was a great one, right?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that kind of made my day when that happened. Okay, so here's a book marketing secret that I can tell you, a strategy that most of your readers can try, which is this. Try asking. Okay. Try asking. That's advice that I think will hold the test of time. I love Seth Godin's
Oh,
blogs,
me too.
and I sometimes one arrives right at the moment I need to read that blog. I'm
Yep.
struggling with something, and then that arrives. That it's like, is he reading my mind? What
I know. Oh, my goodness.
right. So I simply reached out to him with an email, basically letting him know that I was a constant reader and follower, that the impact that he's had on me, that I had this book, this is what it's about, and a blurb from him would mean the world. And he asked the book to see the book, and then he agreed to provide a blurb. So it was
Oh my goodness.
so you have to ask yourself this. I've talked to authors who are really reticent to ask big name authors for blurbs or something, and you're right. So what's the worst case situation? They say no, or they don't respond. Well, them not responding is the situation in which you're living right now. They don't know who you are, so it's not a
No
down.
change,
It's a
yeah.
no change. Them saying no is pretty much a no change, So you've only got an upside on this. It's worth giving it a shot.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so amazed that you would have, the confidence in yourself to contact him, and it turned out so well.
Let me say, yes, I sound incredibly confident, but when I sent the request, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing this. I was giving myself pats on the back for doing something when I didn't feel confident in doing it, because I know that that's how you build confidence and resilience, is by doing the things when you find it a little bit frightening.
Yeah,
So,
going
yeah.
out there. Yeah,
Yeah,
I
yeah.
agree. So you offer courses for writers. What kind of courses do you offer?
Well, so far I've got two. One is about the revision, the act of revising your writing. It's not fiction focused. It doesn't mean that it doesn't work for fiction, but it doesn't address anything that's fiction specific, like plot or character, any of that. But it's again with this. So I, as you, the name of my book, one of them is The Writer's Process. So I'm focused on how can we work on our process to make ourselves more efficient and effective. And that's the mindset that I apply to revision. It's like, well, if you start at the big picture and work your way into narrower details, then you won't waste time on stuff that you cut and things like that. So that course is about how to be a better self-reviser, self-editor. And then I have a for people who write in the workplace, on the job, I have a totally free course on managing the review and approval process. So it's not actually writing, it's how to get your writing past those last hurdles of the reviews and approvals. And that's if you're working, you know, if you write in your day job, you might find that there's some advice in there that could be helpful.
Oh, I bet that's helping a lot of people. Yeah. That's awesome. And what are you currently working on?
Well, so I'm still sort of in publishing recovery mode, right? which is, right, you know this. So I published my fourth book this past August, and then did a bunch of work around the launch for that book. And now I am working on doing what I need to do to promote and keep that going. And also, I just, you know, took a little break. so I'm going to try to not write anything other than blog posts for a little while, not dive right into another book, because I need to, I think, stay up for air for a while. Once I get caught up in writing a book, it does kind of take over my life for a while, you know, my attention.
Yeah.
As I'm sure your listeners kind of experienced as well.
Waking and sleeping and everything in between, yeah.
Yeah, it almost, you reach a point, at least, I mean, I can go through the research and some of the drafting, but I reach a point at which I just have to dive all in, and then it becomes almost like this mini obsession for a while.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've just started nonfiction writing, and I've just writing little ones, and it's really just as time consuming and heart wrenching as writing fiction.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It's a different, you know, you still keep your brain going. You're still doing that creative work of trying to come up with, oh, here's a good analogy, or making sure you're making this as interesting as possible. Yeah. It takes that same kind of, well, I don't know the same, but it takes a certain kind of immersion, I think.
Yeah.
At least if you're going to write something that's
readable.
That's readable, and the act of writing it, you're really digging deep. You're really kind of coming up with something very good. If you just sort of spit out a bunch of stuff and call it a day, and there is a lot of nonfiction out like that, maybe you don't. But yeah, I'd rather write something where I feel like the author has gone on a journey with me. So
and that's how your writing sounds when you read it. It's wonderful. It's very rich.
Oh, good.
And
thank
easy
you.
To read. So what was your latest release? What was the name of that one?
So the name of that book was Writing to be Understood, What mm-hmm. Works and Why. So this is about really what's going on in the reader's head. And it's really specific to nonfiction, this one, especially if you have to write about anything complicated. You know how sometimes for a lot of my pleasure reading is nonfiction. It's history or science or nature. And I pick up books sometimes that I think the topic's going to be fascinating, and then I just can't get through it. And I pick up other books by authors that I know and love, and they could write about, you know, tree bark, and I'd be like, oh, cool. You know,
I know.
That's what they bring to it. So this book is about how do you make your nonfiction writing more of that second category, more of that, you know, bringing your reader along, getting them interested, explaining stuff, and keeping them engaged. So that's what that one's about. And it was so much fun to do, too, because I interviewed a mess of authors. And
oh, yeah.
That's always fun, as you.
I love interviewing authors. You learn so much. And I mean, I enjoy reading their books, too, but it just comes to life when you talk to them.
So it does, yeah.
So where can we find this and your other books?
So my books themselves should be in, I've gone wide with my books, so they should be in all of the usual places, Amazon, of course, and all sorts of ebook platforms, Kobo and iBooks and Nook. And if you go into an indie bookstore, you probably have to ask them to order them, because we all know how tough retail placement is. But if you want to just find out more about the books themselves or me, I have a website, which is just my name, annjanzer.com, with an E on the Ann, the silent E. And there's links there to all the books and my writing blogs, things like that are on that website. And there's also a contact form. So if you want to send me a question or comment, I always love to hear from people. So you can contact me from the website too.
Perfect. And what about you? What are you reading these days?
So I'm always reading a whole mess of stuff because
I know what you mean.
Reading a book on artificial intelligence called Artificial Unintelligence, which is really interesting. And I just finished a book, though, that I think would I finished it, but I'm going to go back and work through it again, called Newsletter Ninja by Tammy LeBlanc.
I'm reading that one. Oh, it's so good,
right?
I changed my whole newsletter.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was already trying to do a lot of it, what she's, but it's like, it's just, it's if you're, you know, author newsletter, which you need to be, if you're an author, basically, you should probably read her book, right?
Oh, yeah.
And she does a great job of explaining some of the complicated things, like, you know, email deliverability and all this stuff. I mean, she keeps it fun and engaging, and yet she gives you all this really useful information that will help you figure out a strategic approach to your author newsletter. So that is something I would recommend.
I love that book. I'd recommend it too.
Yeah.
So do you have a favorite cocktail or mocktail to share? So,
you know, I'm really more of a craft beer girl.
Right?
Okay. And but there's something I just had recently I'll just share because it's seasonal, which is the Kennebunk Pumpkin Ale at Trader Joe's. So it's like a pumpkin spice ale instead of a pumpkin spice latte.
Really? Oh, my goodness.
And you know, you think, well, really? But it actually is pretty good. And I also like it because it's seasonal and it's fairly low alcohol, which is for me also. I'm kind of a lightweight. So the combination is great.
You're all about the flavor. I love it.
All about the flavor, right? Exactly.
And do you have a final word for us?
So here's my final word. Which is to think about, you know, we write for lots and lots of different reasons, but there's one that really helps keep us going, which is that is if you think about writing as a way of giving something of value to your readers and focus on that, then you never get that discouraged. If you're reaching readers, even a small subset, and giving them something of value, then you are achieving your objective. Success is within reach, and giving value is a terrific way to think about how to grow, how to expand your audience, how to do marketing. When you focus on that, things kind of naturally happen in a good way. So I would suggest that as you look at, you know, why you're writing, you know, focus on that. How can I provide value? And the value might be just a really incredibly fascinating mystery to people who love your genre. I mean, I'm not saying it has to be something practical that they're going to go off and do. But it's, you know, if you are providing value, then your books will grow, your business will grow.
Great advice. Well, thanks. Thank you, Anne. This has been a great interview, and I love listening to you because you keep coming up with these brilliant points.
Oh, thank you.
And for my audience, tune in next week for my interview with mystery writer Janice McDonald. We'll be talking about genre fiction being the poor cousin at the table. Thanks for listening. Now it's your turn. What do you think about today's topic? You can leave comments on my website or email me directly. I'd love to hear from you. If you want to know more about me, check out my podcast website, bloodsweatandwords.com. You can also sign up for my weekly newsletter, which contains writing tips and information about upcoming episodes. You get a free book if you do. Now, if you really, really enjoyed the show, and I hope you did, consider becoming one of my patrons through Patreon and help me pay the podcasting bills. Information is in the show notes and also on the Patreon site. I leave you today with a quote from Albert Einstein. Creativity is intelligence having fun. And that's a wrap. See you between the lines.